Hello, hello, hello. Is it on? Are we audible? Ah, wonderful. Thank you. Thank you all for coming. As always, when we do an unveiling, it's thrilling and nerve-wracking for me. But I am exceedingly pleased that you are here. I'm exceedingly pleased that Rivera is here. And I'm exceedingly pleased that Sherry Mitchell is here somewhere. Or did she leave already? Oh, there you are, right there. Well, I'm gonna do it aside right here, just because you're sitting almost the same distance from me. You were at an event we did with Reggie Harris, and so Reggie and I were talking about the song "This Land Is Your Land," and how most kids don't know what the whole song, and so they don't really know what the theme is supposed to be, and the point of the song is to ask this big question. Is this land really made for all of us or just some of us? And I remember, looking at Reggie and I said, yeah, the song is this your land or is this my land? And later I looked at the film of that moment, and right straight ahead of us, between us, there was Sherry, which would have deepened the question quite a bit about whose land this really was. And it'd be interesting to, we've never talked about that song and how it strikes you, but probably differently. Anyway, this is wonderful you're here. Thank you. And thank you all. Well, first I want to say a couple little things and then get this going in a different direction. This hat I'm wearing, which says kindness on it, where's Connie? It was about 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago. We had three students and three parents and two teachers from the Monarch Learning Project. Is that what it's called? Academy. Monarch Learning Academy in Orlando, Florida. We had been doing a Samantha Smith Challenge educational project with them. These kids were studying plastics and single-use plastics and trying to get them out of the environment. And they had prepared these little kids an amazing presentation where they spoke and showed slides and talked about all the work they were doing and the success they were doing and then the unsuccess they were doing in other places. And we, Americans to Tell the Truth, have been pushing them pretty hard to keep up this activism and stop, I mean, get plastics not just out of their school, but perhaps out of Disney. And I don't know if they'll actually take on that challenge or not. But they showed up and they had. They gave us all these hats, and I thought it was kind of amusing to have a what looks like a hunting cap in Maine with the word kindness on it. It kind of makes you a walking oxymoron, right? So I'm going to say just a couple of sort of diverse things. One is that a lot of you may know that because of the historical moment we're in or struggling with at this time, the interest in Americans Who Tell the Truth has quadrupled. We get people asking for shows and appearances and all kinds of things just every day from all over the place. It's very exciting and exhausting. But it reminded me, though, of, I don't know, how many of you have seen that movie Conclave? Yeah, it's cool. Gail and I watched it the other night, and there's a it really interesting moment in it where, the conclave, which is what is just starting in Rome right now, where all these cardinals, 182, 103, I forget how many the number. Anyway, they're working supposedly to find a new pope, and they're working mostly against each other and against the history of the church. I mean, there's a lot of corruption, there's hypocrisy, there's enormous ambition, and all those sort of negative forces seem to be driving them apart and not getting them any closer to finding somebody who seems to be a little bit of all those things to fill in the role of the Pope. And at a very crucial moment, this young cardinal who's been in Kabul stands up and said, you're making a big mistake here. This is not about who we have been as a church, because they had been trying to frame it in terms of history. And he said, we will be defined on what we do next. And I thought that is so apropos of where we are in this country and in most of the projects we do, whatever happened before, what we do next is now urgent and really, really important. You know, how we design our futures, how we relate to each other, how we try to make the best use of ourselves and each other, and do it with a spirit of love and dignity that is not often shown. And why? And for that reason, you know, the moment we have right now with having Rivera here to be with us and then to be honored for the work that she does, which is all about what we do next. And I want to say also one other thing about that. You know, one of the portraits that she asked to have some other portrait subjects here to kind of put her portrait in a context. And one of the ones that I wanted to bring, wasn't able to because it's out at a show somewhere, was the portrait of Coleman McCarthy, who is often considered the father of peace studies in this country, who started these teaching peace studies and designing programs that could then be used all kinds of other places. One of the things he talks about is, you know, one of the things we want to have happen in schools is for kids, you know, to really ask important questions and expect answers. And he says that that's not really the way we ought to look at it. He said they ought to be able to ask the questions that insist on real answers. And as though, you know, when you ask questions to people in power, politicians, militarists, you have to ask the questions that, you know, they have to really answer. They can't just give you the formulaic answer that we hear all the time and is given in our schools to our young people. You know, war is good. War is moral. War is necessary. War makes the world a better place. War is patriotic. War is inevitable. That's what, if you just ask the question, that's the response you get. But if you insist that they give you a different set of answers because of what you know and you know what they're not saying, we're in a very different place. That's why Rivera's work is so incredibly important. You know, we sometimes look at this moment as being, you know, so urgent. How can we possibly take the long view towards changing this society, the philosophy of this society, and the way people act and will act in the future? Well, really, we have no choice. We have to do that. If we expect to make a change, it will be of any lasting, import. And I don't know how many of you have actually read Rivera's books. There are a lot of them here. I'm sure some of you have. But they sort of check off all the boxes of what literature can be. You know, first, they're beautifully written. The language is exciting. The metaphors are amazing. The plots and the characters are really extraordinarily well developed. And they carry this message that is really exciting, you know, making heroes of people, young people, who act with steadfastness and courage and determination and humor and goodwill to make the world a different place, to fight, you know, to take down, you know, the most egregious bad actors in the things they do. They are, you know, I remember the first time I read one, I was expecting not something that I was a page turner, that I didn't want to put down, that I was, every second was learning, you know, about how to make peace in the world. Anyways, it's been a thrill reading her and seeing that the kind of work she does and and we always talk about how important it is to change the narrative, you know, and who gets to tell that narrative and who gets to control it. And then you find somebody who is actually writing a new narrative that could actually do all that and do it in a way that is exciting and fun and, you know, makes you want to get in line behind her and behind her characters and spread the word about how this can be done, that we can actually solve some of these problems about militarism and violence. I have the great pleasure again to introduce Sherry Mitchell. I think probably you all know her to some extent. I mean, she's from the Penobscot Nation, a lawyer, an extraordinary writer, and now the founder of the Land Peace Foundation and all the work that they do to enact the kind of ways that we need to be living to survive on this planet. You know, it's not just writing about it, but actually doing it and showing how it can be done and with the kind of spirit that needs to be done. And, you know, she also just finished last week that walk across the state for a week that ended up in Augusta on a beautiful day after walking through the rain for a long time and with a wonderful crowd of people there, very excited about the message of unity and peacefulness and kindness to all people, all the time. And we're just delighted to have Sherry here, who has worked with Rivera in the past and is going to say a few words about her. Sherry.
Kwe Pasidoin. Hello, everyone. Andeli Wisi Wanahamu Kwaset, and Najio Banawabskewi. And Delnabamakawasus Nelbanawabskewi Negakakagus Niltibaik. My name in my language, Wanahamukwasit. I'm from the Penobscot Nation. My family is Bear Clan from the Penobscot Nation and Crow Clan from the Passamaquoddy tribe at Tibaik. And if you're wondering whose land it is, this is Wabanaki territory. So Agwenude, Nilchwabanakiek, welcome to Wabanaki territory. I met Rivera out there in the airwaves quite some time ago when she invited me to be on her show Occupy Radio. And, I had no idea who she was. I had received a book in the mail with a bag of dandelion seeds. I said, well, you know, this looks interesting. And so we had this conversation for about 45 minutes, and I introduced her to a phrase that she found a bit provocative, conquest activism. And she's like, wait a minute. And we had a two-hour conversation after the interview was finished about that. And that pretty much told me everything I needed to know about who she was as a human being. This was someone who was willing to be challenged, who was willing to look deeply, who was willing to ask questions that were important, to reassess a position that she had taken, and to grow in a moment when the opportunity arose. And that has been my experience of her over the years. I'm not going to look at her because I'll cry. Don't look at me. I'll look at you later. We continued to be in conversation after that and eventually found our way to doing a radio program together, a podcast called Love and Revolution Radio, where we did hundreds of interviews and had some pretty great success with it. And throughout that process, she continued to lean deeply into difficult questions, to bring forward really thought-provoking curiosity to the conversation that oftentimes would open it up in ways that none of us had expected. And the rhythm that we found in doing this together, I feel, enriched my life. I'm sure that you would say the same. And we found this synergy that we had with one another that was really beautiful. And we continued to do that until she got sick. Um, I'm trying to think about my shoulder pain right now from my shoulder surgery so I don't cry again. And I was really afraid that we were going to lose her. We oftentimes lose the brightest lights far too early. And I had that worry in that moment. But she brought her same indomitable spirit to that challenge as she does to all other challenges, and moved through it and overcame it, and is here to shine more brightly for all of us. I was a little bit worried earlier when both Rob and Scott started to steal my thunder a little bit. And, you know, Rivera and I are both Leos, and so the thought of somebody stealing our thunder is, like, really challenging to our growth. But then I realized this is thematic. When everybody that talks about Rivera wants to talk about the capacity to change a narrative, the ability to shift us away from the common themes of warfare and conquest and domination and destruction and dismantling to ones of building a path forward that we can all walk upon, is something that is so essential to this time that we are living in. And the way that it's done, not in a Pollyannish sort of way, but in a way that invites us into the story as real people. In fact, there's a version of me in one of her stories. She let me read every word that character was going to speak to make sure that it felt authentic. Because what she does is she writes authentically about the very real challenges that we're facing in ways that give us a pathway forward that is an option that has not been presented to us in real time in the world that we're living in. And if we want to be able to pave a path forward that brings us to the place that we most want to be, we need these stories to exist. We need young people and old people and all of the people in between reading and imagining and believing into those stories. I recently wrote a blog about all of these predictions that people are claiming are coming true at this time. They say, isn't it amazing that Ursula Le Guin, Octavia Butler, and Orson Welles have, is that right? Yeah. Have predicted the realities of this time. Millions of people across the globe have read those stories. They have become embedded energetically in a very deep feeling sense with those characters. They have brought them to life through their collective energy and visioning over time of those stories. I don't think that what we're learning today is that those people were clairvoyant. I think what we're learning today is that we, as readers of these stories, who are feeling into them, who are collectively holding the vision of them, have the power to create the reality that we are walking into by choosing what we give our attention to. What more powerful message could we be receiving at this time where we feel so powerless? And it gives me incredible hope to know that all of Rivera's stories are now being read and held and collectively felt by young people from across the globe. I've bought copies for my grandchildren, for my nephew, for all of the young people that I know. Because I think it's important for us to be able to hold a vision of the place that we most want to be. Having arrived there, with methodology that allows for the sanctity and the dignity of our spirits to remain intact. And that's the incredible gift that Rivera gives to us. And so when I hugged her behind the portrait when we were hiding, having our moment a little bit ago, I said, it's about damn time that this is happening. And she said, well, I needed a little bit of time to do what I do. And I said, you've only begun to do what you do. And so this is a moment in a brilliant life that has just beginning to shine that we all get to bear witness to. And so I honor Rob for choosing wisely, and I honor my sister for being such a brilliant light, and may we all be mirrors reflecting that on this day. I love you.
Okay, now the fun part. Sherry, thank you for, I mean, anybody who follows Sherry at all, I think comes to expect a perspective as full and beautiful as what we just heard. And, you know, when I hear her speak like that, and then look at the kind of people who are trying to control the destiny of this country and the world right now, it just seems impossible that we have these kinds, a person like Sherry with that kind of wisdom and force and yes, you get it. Rivera, come up here. You've got a lot to live up to right now. So we are going to unveil this portrait, and then Rivera is going to speak about her work to all of us. You ready?
No.
I'm not ready.
I definitely can't look at that and not cry. That is so beautiful, Rob. Thank you so much. You know, the minute I cut my hair, I was like, oh no, Rob's going to be so mad at me about that. I should have done it next week. Thank you. Thank you. This is an incredible honor. It moves me really deeply in my soul to be part of this portrait series that is full of 280 portraits who are all my heroes. I mean, talk about something to live up to here. I hope I get that another 100 years, Sherry. So I want to say thank you to start, because so many people have contributed to my journey and to the work that I do. My father, who is an anti-Vietnam peace activist and a local organic grower. My mother, who is here with us today. You could give her a round of applause. Who is an incredible artist in her own right. My sisters who are here, my brothers who are far away, my niece and nephews, you'll hear a little bit about why you can thank them for the Ariara series. All of my readers, and especially the people who have been part of publishing my novels year after year. We do community publishing campaigns because when we came out with this book, I thought no publisher is going to be crazy enough to tell this much truth. So people like you supported the books. Actually, some of you were part of the community publishing campaign for this. And I really feel that I cannot do what I do without all of you, and that we are an ecosystem. And as Rob knows, there's a lot that goes into painting a portrait, and not all of that is paint. And there's a lot that goes into a life, and not all of that is in one body. So thank you. In November, I had the amazing experience of going to see all 200 and close to 80 paintings hanging in Lewiston all at once. And I walked through the aisles of these waves of portrait, people you know like Cesar Chavez and Dolores Huerta and Dr. King, who's here today in portrait form. and so many countless others, Mother Jones. And I walked through the exhibit with tears running down my face, my body shaking, because here are the people we can be proud of standing among. This country has a long history, and much of it is brutal and violent and abysmal and unworthy. But all the way along, every chapter of that have been people like Jeanette Rankin or Polly Murray, or Edward Snowden and Kathy Kelly, people who say, this is wrong and I will tell the truth about that, even at the risk of my life, even at the risk of my freedom, even at the risk of everything. And those are the people that we can be honored to stand beside. But Rob didn't just paint them. He did something really extraordinary. He painted them with kind eyes. Look at their portraits. Each one of these wrestled with rage at the system, sorrow, a hefty critique. If you've ever looked at his portrait of Frederick Douglass, that was a man who could scorch the earth with his words and really excoriate the injustices of racism and slavery. And he looks at you with such kind eyes, saying, come, join me. Rob doesn't just paint faces, he paints souls. And he paints the soul of a nation, the soul that is worth redemption. And with it, he paints a simple and revolutionary idea. What does it mean to tell the truth in one's times? What does it mean to tell the truth in our time? One of the things that most people know me for, besides being outspoken and opinionated, and my red hair, that's pretty notorious, is this book, The Dandelion Insurrection. Here's how the very first words. In a time that looms around the corner of today, in a place on the edge of our nation, it is a crime to dissent, a crime to assemble, a crime to stand up for one's life. Despite all this, or perhaps because of it, the Dandelion Insurrection began. It was 13 years ago that I wrote those words. I scribbled them on a scrap of paper that would become the novel about a hidden corporate dictatorship in a slightly fictionalized United States. It was speculative fiction then. But that corner has been rounded. That time is now. That place is here. And we must see ourselves in this story. Like the characters in the books, we must hold resistance meetings in our living rooms. We must plant victory gardens for people and for planet. We must defend our students when they speak out against genocide, and like the characters in the books say, they are not a terrorist. We must stop mass roundups and detentions of migrants or anyone. We must bang our pots and pans until they repeal anything that looks even the remotest possibility like martial law. We must challenge wealth and greed on what we call in the book Greenback Street or Wall Street or Main Street or Capitol Hill or anywhere that it rears its ugly head. We must rise up for democracy, real democracy, of, by, and for the people. And most of all, we must remember our love. The quote that Rob chose to put onto the portrait and immortalize forever, good thing it didn't have any typos, Rob. It's more than I could say for some of my work. When fear is used to control us, love is how we rebel, not courage. Well, that's helpful. Love. Because love is the only force strong enough to get us through what we face. Love is the only force strong enough to prevent the forces of hatred, fear, and greed from occupying our hearts and our minds. And it is vitally important that we do not let them succeed in one special thing. We cannot let them succeed in turning us into them. They want us to be frightened. They want us to be consumed by hate and animosity because they know exactly what to do with that. They crack down, they round it up, they deport it to El Salvador. What they don't know what to do with, what they cannot stop, what they can't handle is our love, solidarity, and vision. So let us not become what we oppose. That's how they win. Instead, let us be what we propose and make our resistance irresistible. Another section in the book. The dandelion insurrection was as small as baking bread in the oven and as large as bringing down dictators. It was practical and metaphorical, symbolic and literal. It was real. It was legend. It grew hope. It spread kindness. It sowed the seeds of resistance in the ground of adversity. In the soil of oppression, in the shadow of fear, in the stranglehold of tyranny, in the death grip of greed, anywhere and everywhere, the concrete of control paved over the goodness of the heart. The dandelion insurrection sprang up in the cracks. We rebel with love because it is unstoppable, because it heals, liberates, and transforms. Because while this administration, no, let's call it a regime, is unworthy of our fear, our vision for humanity and the planet is worthy of our exuberant, undaunted love. So the first line of resistance is in reclaiming your heart. The second line of resistance is a little bit harder. And it requires me to actually be an American who tells the truth. The thing about all these amazing people that Rob has painted is that they didn't just tell the truths that were popular and appealing. They told the truth when everybody hated what they were saying. And when they sometimes very literally shot the messenger. Truth tellers are always more popular in hindsight. So I'm very glad you're all here today thanking me for it. The job of the truth teller is not just to say, is not to say that the emperor looks so handsome in his clothes. It's not even just to say that the emperor has no clothes. It's to ask the question, why do we have an emperor? So the truth that I want to say today about the mess that we find ourselves in is that we each played a part in getting us to today. Some of us went out and voted him into power. Some of us willingly are going along with his orders. Some of us resisted, but not enough. Some of us were so deep in our scorn and our arrogance that we galvanized our friends and neighbors into voting us into the mess that we're in. Some of us were afraid. Some of us were tuned out. Some of us didn't know what to do. This is the kind of painful truth. But it's a painful truth that tells us where our power lies. Because when we're willing to take responsibility for the mess that we're in, we find wherein lies our power to start to change how we got here and where we'll be going. So in this power, we can either stand afraid and powerless. We can say it's just them, it's all their fault. Or we can say, hey, we have a part to play in this, and I'm going to change that part. I'm going to change that story. Here's an example. Every dollar you spend today, tomorrow, and the next day, you're either going to give it to the billionaires who have too much money already and who are using it to abuse us, or you're going to give it to your friends and neighbors to build a different world with it. And you may say, oh, I'm too small to make a difference. I only have a dollar today to shift around. Well, the population of India in 1930 decided to start moving their money around. They took back 18% of the British colonial revenue. And instead of wearing the clothes of their oppressors in the imported fabric, they started wearing their own homespun. Instead of buying their oppressors salt, they walked down to their ocean and they made their own salt, and they kicked the British Empire out. In 1765, when a bunch of American colonists thought that the king was abusing them too much, they stopped buying imported British goods, and they launched the world's most successful boycotts to date, 90 to 98% participation rates in not buying imported British goods. When they refused to pay the fees on the Stamp Act, the British didn't even have enough money to print the stamps. When they built their own government, which is called the Continental Congress, they stopped giving the British crown the authority to decide their fates. And like the Indians, like the early Americans, like the dandelions in my novel, it's time to do this again. We have to stop giving the billionaires our money, stop subscribing to their channels and products and cultures. We need to stop obeying their cruel and illegal orders. We have to reclaim our dollars one at a time if need be. We need to reclaim our time 1 hour if need be. We need to reclaim our power one action at a time. Of all the truths that I've told over the years, this one is the most revolutionary. Nonviolence works. In 2011, a pair of researchers named Erica Chenoweth and Maria Stephan proved, beyond a doubt, that not only was nonviolent action working, it was working twice as often in a third of the amount of time with a fraction of the casualties. When I heard that, I looked around at all the books churning out teen assassins and sword-swinging heroes and Star Wars, and I said, hold the presses. What are we doing? In our literature, in our movies, we're literally teaching people outdated technologies. Two times as fast, a third of the amount of time, fraction of the casualties. This is what we should be telling heroic stories about. I looked over at my nephew and my nephew and my niece. They were a lot younger then. This was back in 2015 or so. They were smaller, but definitely not cuter. So I thought, what are they going to read when they start reading The Hunger Games, when they get old enough for that? When they start looking at that YA shelf and all of a sudden it's zombies and vampires and dystopian worlds. So I set out to write a story in which we replace the typical war and violence of fantasy with active nonviolence, boycotts, strikes, sit-ins, protests, marches, rallies, occupations, blockades, civil disobedience. I wanted to know, would it work to tell a compelling story in a fantasy world without all that war and violence? So raise your hand if you've read an Ariara book. Okay, let me know. Did it work?
It worked!
All right, glad to hear that. Phew, for a minute there, I wasn't sure what you'd say. I looked around the world and I saw that the heroes aren't the ones who fight wars, they're the ones who stop wars. They're people like the Women of Liberia Mass Action for Peace that stopped the Second Liberian Civil War. People like Mairead McGuire and the Community of Peace People that stopped the Troubles in Northern Ireland. People like Samantha Smith, who is from Maine, who helped to end the Cold War. The heroes of today use nonviolent action, and they use it powerfully. They're toppling dictators and authoritarians in the Philippines, South Korea, Serbia, Chile, Malawi, Pakistan, Guatemala, Sudan, Thailand, Bangladesh, Nepal, Mali, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Mongolia, Peru, Lebanon, Tunisia, Georgia, Liberia, and beyond. Yeah. My work, from writing novels to editing nonviolence news to teachings and trainings to organizing to public speaking, is about uplifting these stories. And our work is to live these stories in our own time. If they can stop injustice with nonviolent action, so can we. If they can stop wars, so can we. If they can oust dictators, so can we. Pauli Murray, who's over there in portrait form, said, "One person plus one typewriter constitutes a movement." As a queer black radical feminist, she reminded us of something that Gandhi said, that even if you are a minority of one, the truth is still the truth. In nonviolence, we know that the truth is a force that will set us free, and has many times before. Gandhi called this force satyagraha, another word for nonviolence, clinging to the truth, holding fast to it. And along with Dr. King, Cesar Chavez, and so many of Rob's portrait subjects, they have proved that nonviolence is a force that rattles the foundations of empire, that shatters the chains of oppression, liberates and empowers people, and changes everything. So with protests, rallies, marches, boycotts, strikes, and so on, we tell the truth about the problems. We tell the truth about how we're going to make this change. And we tell one more big, bold, beautiful truth: that humanity is worth the struggle. As Walt Whitman, a gay man who was never allowed to be truthful about his sexuality in his own time, so beautifully did in Song of Myself, it is our sacred task to love the full breadth of our humanity in all its diversity, brilliance, and beauty. It's the truth teller's job not only to decry injustice, but to sing the body politic and lift up the extraordinary vision of the world that we seek. A world worthy of the extraordinary beauty of who we are. A world where all beings are seen as equal, are protected and respected, and fully welcomed in the societies that we build together. It is no accident that the Dandelion Insurrection closes with lines that speak to this body politic, this poetic body politic. Charlie looked at all the people, the millions of faces in this ocean. The tide of history ebbed and flowed through their bodies. Breath swelled in his chest. Love rippled, surged, and crested. And a thought crashed through him like a wave. We are one people, indivisible, not by allegiance or by force, but entwined through the love in our hearts, through our pulse and our breath and our frail human skins, the body of the people stands immortal. We rise and we fall, we sweep by in waves of faces, we roll in the rushing tide of life. We are foolish, we are proud, we are loving, we are tired. We weep for beauty, laugh in sorrow, cry out lonely in the night. We hurt and cause harm. We are lovers and beloveds. We shall live, we shall die, we shall pass and still remain, for the body of the people lives forever. I look at these Americans Who Tell the Truth portrait series, and I see the lineage to which we all belong, these imperfect human beings who stood up in their time to wrest a better world out of the wreckage they inherited. And it is now our turn. We stand on their shoulders, gifted by the long, hard work that they have done. It is our turn to let truth roar through our throats. It is our turn to let truth walk in our bodies. It is our turn to let truth sing through our actions. It is our turn to live our lives as if our paintings already hung in this series. We stand in a lineage of people and countless others who came before us. These are the laborers who went on strike in the mills, the African Americans who sat in at the lunch counters, the conscientious objectors to the Vietnam War, the silent sentinels outside the White House, the artists and the writers, the whistleblowers and truth tellers. Their eyes are watching us now. And remember, Rob has immortalized those eyes with such kindness and understanding. They have stood where we stand now. Come, they say. The journey has been long. The promised land may still be far off, but we are marching with you, and we will get there together. Nothing can stop us. It is as inevitable as dandelions in the spring. So remember your courage, remember your love, and as we say in the Dandelion Insurrection, remember to be kind, be connected, and be unafraid. Thank you.
That was amazing. Yeah. Thank you, Rivera. I mean, I think you, every moment you surprise us, going further and saying it more beautifully. It's just wonderful what you do. So we have, there's a woman here. Is her name Aura? Aura, there she is, right there, from Vermont, who read the Dandelion Insurrection and wrote a song about it, and then got in touch with Rivera and asked if she could share it with us. And she's going to come up now and do that.
I had the privilege and honor of meeting Rivera for the first time today. I read The Dandelion Insurrection 4 or 5 years ago, and I don't know how many times I read it, but I picked it up again this year, you know when and you know why. And I've read it another 3 times, and I immediately, when I got on her website, I saw the 10-book series, and I ordered 10 books, then I ordered 10 more, and got them into my library. I'm honored to be here today in celebration of your inspirational and visionary work, and you're certainly an American who tells the truth. So grateful. So about 3 weeks ago, I wrote this song inspired by Rivera and the Dandelion Insurrection. This is Like a Dandelion. Like dandelion we grow through the cracks that divide us from our roots, and with persistence we bring love to our existence, resisting hatred, resisting greed, insisting that love is what we need, resisting hatred, resisting greed, insisting that love is what we need. The dandelion insurrection takes us in a new direction with kindness, courage, and connection. We build a new strong foundation on which we can create a way for all to participate in redefining democracy to be of, by, and for everybody. Of, by, and for everybody. Let's sing that again. Dandelion insurrection takes us in a new direction with kindness, courage, and connection. We build a strong foundation on which we can create a way for all to participate in redefining democracy to be of, by, and for everybody. Of, by, and for everybody. The wealthy and the poor, equality and justice for those who have and who have not. It's all one big corporate plot. Criminals in power, living in their ivory towers. So much suffering in their wake as they take and take and take. So much hatred, so much greed, so much more than they need. The dandelion insurrection takes us in a new direction with kindness, courage, and connection. We build a strong foundation on which we can create a way for all to participate in redefining democracy to be of, by, and for every.
body of by and for. Everybody like the dandelion we grow, 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 like the dandelion.
Amazing. Aura, that's fantastic. I mean, it's so interesting when you reach out to one person and 10 people respond, 100 people respond, and you get something like this. I mean, you never know. But it wouldn't happen unless the impetus for it started in the place of love. So thank you. Thank you. Oh, there's Zoe. Thank you. Another portrait sitting right here. I want to... I don't know, I just want to sort of be in this moment for a second. But I want Christy Gonzalez, our sort of executive director of Americans Who Tell the Truth right now, to come up and talk a little bit about where we are and what we want going forward. Thank you so much for being here. And I know Rivera will be here to sign books after, as will I. We have some other books over here too. Anyway, Christy, come up here.
I just wanted to quickly thank everyone for coming. Obviously, this was an incredible event. We were so fortunate to have so many brilliant words shared with us, especially in a time which is really difficult for many of us to be in. This was my church today. Thank you. I wanted to thank the AWTT members, Ander Landgren, our intern, Connie Carter, our board members who are here. Thank you so much for all of our help. Oh, and Kathleen, where are you? She's here. Hiding. Thank you so much for helping to make this a successful event. Sherry Mitchell for coming here and speaking so beautifully. Arrow for your wonderful music. Am I saying that right?
Arrow.
Okay. Scott Springer and his class. That was incredible. Thank you. Thank you so much, Matt Murphy and WERU, for always coming here and your support. It's amazing how you guys just always show up and help out. Thank you. Truly, thank you. Of course, the Bay School in general for always allowing us to have these events. AWTT, yes, sorry. As you know, AWTT is a nonprofit. We go all over the country. Rob, getting back from Oregon, I don't know, were you home by 10 last night, maybe? We are going all over, working with schools and classrooms to help bring these stories and encouragement to tell students, you know, the real truth, the real heroes, who they should be looking to right now, and inspiring them to act in their own communities with the Samantha Smith Challenge and other projects that we have going on. We have the opportunity for people to participate in donating to bring these portraits in person to schools all over the country. We'd be happy to talk to anyone about it and what we do. And mostly just making sure that everyone is talking about us and telling people about our program and encourage them to come to our website, look at our lesson plans that are online for free. One exciting thing that I will end with is coming soon, probably by the end of this week, we have a new line of protest wear that we're putting together with the faces of some of these portrait members on them to really be there. Courage is contagious, to have the faces of the people who've led there, been there before, and led the charge, and we need to inspire us more now than ever. So if you haven't already, please join our mailing list or email list. There's a sign-up QR code over there, and we look forward to seeing it more events. Thank you so much.
I just want to say one more thing. I assume that there are other people besides myself who would like to hear Arrow sing again. And I'm wondering if where we can find that song, how we can use it, promote it. Where will we find you?
I've done a lot of recording on GarageBand. I have over 50 songs on SoundCloud, but I had to get a different computer. And I don't know how to use the new version of GarageBand, and I can't find anybody to help me, so it's not recorded yet. Great. That sounds like a plan.
Thank you so much. Thank you. In case there's anybody else who wants to come up here and say a few words, otherwise you're dismissed. And you can.